for Friday, Busted Pencils producer's choice. Yeah, we're talking about Jacob. It's me, Dr. Tim Slecker, and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci in the mobile office tonight. But hey, that's the way we are here at Busted Pencils, committed. Wherever we go, you can count on us to deliver the goods. And the goods today are, it's all about Jacob making the show all about interviewing us. Jacob.
Tim, I think we need to take a moment to acknowledge before we get into the exciting producer's choice plan that I've created. We should acknowledge that we all gave you a very hard time when you were on the road one time. And I think we should apologize because we all know sometimes everybody but me doesn't have to be in the office here and things happen.
I would like to actually see you produce while driving.
Yeah, let's cram the board into my passenger seat, and that would be exciting, yeah.
Well, you know, Jacob, I actually, just for a moment, I thought you were going somewhere else when you did that. We should also take a moment to reflect and think back on an incredible musical career, but Ace Frehley passed away. The original lead guitarist for Kiss, Johnny Lupinacci. Did you know that? Yeah.
Detroit band. Yeah, I did. Yeah. And yeah, so a lot of loss in the music world. We also said goodbyes to D'Angelo,
right?
Another big musical artist lost to the great world of music this week. So, you know, it's a week of mourning.
You gotta ask though this one, because Halloween's coming up, okay. Which member of KISS did you dress up as for Halloween in the days gone by? Johnny Lupinacci.
I don't think I've ever dressed up as a member from KISS, but this is a great idea. Yeah, I'm trying to remember. It would have been a great group costume. I would have begged for Gene Simmons and probably ended up with Peter Criss.
I was going to say, I would assume Johnny Lupinacci would have picked Gene Simmons. Okay, Jacob, I know it's still your show, but your past KISS costume.
Yeah, well, as somebody born in the late 90s, I'm obviously a huge KISS fan, and I've dressed up as members of KISS all the time. And, Tim, I haven't actually done that, but if I did, I would dress up as the rare 1980s makeupless KISS outfit that no one liked. Uh-oh. And no one remembers.
KISS Unmasked. Well, actually, too, they'll bring this up. When I did do that, I was Ace Frehley, the spaceman. He at that time, he was my favorite. And when they released the solo albums back in the New York groove, one of my favorite songs ever, right there. All right, Jacob, back to you.
Thank you, Tim. Two things I have to say. One, this show, we get so few questions done because it takes so long. We're 5 minutes in, zero questions. We're before the questions have started, we've padded the show. And secondly, Tim, you did you go as a group when you became Ace Frehley, or did you just say, you know what, I don't want to be the front man. I'm going to dress up as Joey Fatone. I'm not going to be Justin. I just want to be one of the other guys.
Well, you know what? I think that I was probably one of maybe four or five different Ace Frehleys of my friends, and some of them were Gene Simmons, because actually, Jacob, growing up in the 70s, you know, elementary school kids, we were fascinated by KISS, and every Halloween, it was, you can count on one of us being one of the members of KISS. So never did we go intentionally as a group, but we were always representing KISS. 1976, I remember it well, third grade. Ricky Higgins introduced me to KISS Alive, the first double album I had never seen such a thing, and look at me now.
Well, that covers my first question, so I won't even do it. We've covered it here. Johnny said, Kiss, that's a great group costume idea. And Tim, your group all went as Peter, Chris, in a group that had so many selections. Let's do the producer's choice show.
For choo-choo, producer, Jacob's Let's choice, go. Chairman of the board. Ow!
You now have two choices.
Chairman of the board, Jacob.
Ow! Jacob, chairman of the board.
I bet the board is spelled B-O-R-E-D.
We choose to go to the moon.
Life's full of tough choices, isn't it?
You chose poorly.
Howdy, fellas. How you doing tonight?
I'm out of my mourning phase, Jacob.
That was quick. Good. You got over the loss pretty quickly during the producer's choice intro.
Yeah.
Guys, we've got a special topic here, and I think there's no better way to introduce it than simply to play this short clip.
Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow.
That's right, folks. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Producer's Choice Show. I am your host, Producer Jacob, and this week I'm joined by two educated educators who do, in fact, despite the rumors, know how to read. Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, thank you both for being here. I love when you guys come on your own show. I think it's a special privilege to have you here.
Oh, thank you, Jacob, for having us.
This week,
awesome.
I need you guys here because we're talking about a very important subject, and that's reading, and we're addressing this question here. Is our children reading good? That's today's topic. Now, this is kind of a follow-up from last week where I introduced the topic of using reading proficiency as a metric for judging teachers and superintendents, which all stemmed from a graph that my cousin sent to me showing the highest paid superintendents in Illinois next to what looked like very dismal reading proficiency numbers. My first question to start this off, does this term, reading proficiency, mean what it looks like to me as a layman, or is this a complicated term? What is this metric that people use? I'm going to start with you, Dr. Tim.
And Jacob, great, great question. In fact, Johnny and I have tried multiple times to help people understand because, actually, the word proficiency communicates, I think, a very much a different sense of what that means as to what it really means when you throw it out there. Because my guess, Jacob, is that when we hear reading proficiency, we think that some form of, you know, reading at what you might imagine grade level. And so when you hear about the horrible rates of proficiency, that must mean a majority of kids in America can't even read at their own grade level. That, Jacob, is just not true. Proficiency actually is an assigned level of reading according to the NAEP, the National Education of Assessment Progress, the nation's report card. Proficiency is, talk to different people, it is classified as the highest level of reading ability above reading for grade level. It is potentially, you know, gifted readers reading, as we said, way above grade level. So when you hear proficiency thrown into, my God, we only have 1/3 of American children reading at proficiency, that's 33% of American kids who are reading way above grade level. That would be the way I would frame that. Johnny, what do you think?
Yeah, Tim, I mean, you nailed it. So to simply answer the question, Jacob, the early part of your question, it said, you know, is this kind of a cooked up, you know, more complicated term? It absolutely is. You know, to the layman's ear, proficient means like what Tim said, hey, you know, it sounds like these kids can't read, or that they're behind in reading, when really proficiency is developed and kind of concocted. It's defined in a particular way. And as we know, we keep saying here on Busted Pencils, usually in the news headings as a way to put down students and teachers.
Okay, so for me as a layman, the typical average Joe, average Jacob, you might even say, I see these shocking sounding statistics where it, you know, it says 110% of kids in Baltimore can't read. I'm like, whoa, that's crazy. But what you're telling me is that this reading proficiency term, and correct me if I'm getting this wrong, but you're telling me that if we compare this to something like, I don't know, wood carving, proficiency does not mean adequately. It means basically mastery. Is that?
I like that. I like that. Yeah, because I can do wood carving. but I wouldn't call my wood carving proficient.
Yes. I would call my wood carving proficient, but I can understand that you're a much more modest man than I am. I want to ask further on this topic. Is it just that there's a misunderstanding for the average person over reading proficiency, meaning mastery rather than adequacy, or is there also more factors that go into this being a faulty term? Are you okay with reading proficiency if people understood what it really is, or do you think there's deeper flaws?
I think there's deeper flaws, big time. It's a term that is defined often with some, I'll be nice, it's like some market interest.
Mm-hmm.
Because if students are not proficient or at proficiency, notice they're not saying at grade level or literate or illiterate, right? They're saying at proficiency, and proficiency is redefined all the time. And in strong connection with goods and services that are mandated then to schools and classrooms and communities that are not at proficiency. So a simple way to say it is to say, oh, you know, a certain percentage of the third graders in a particular area aren't at proficiency, doesn't mean that they're not reading at third grade level. Mm-hmm. It means that how proficiency has been defined is that they're in need of some required goods and services that often cost a lot of money, right, to reach improvement. And this is where we get into that hole. We get into the weeds of the difference between like market ideas, market ideology doesn't match well with education. And I've said this example before, if my job is to sell televisions, right, I'm part of a management sales team at a local, electronics store. And the goal is they set a certain target for us to sell a certain number of TVs. And we all work really, really hard and we sell everybody we know a new TV, right? And then our new goals come out for the next quarter. And they said, Johnny, you and your team, you sold so many TVs, right? We're going to increase the required number of televisions you sell in the next quarter. Well, now I'm in deep, deep trouble because I just sold everybody I know a TV, and there's no way I'm going to reach that increased expectation for the next quarter, right? I know it gets more complicated, planned obsolescence and new technology should help me be like, but wait, you need a new TV because now there are, you know, pictures and pictures and pictures and smarter TVs and all kinds of improved graphics. So you need a new one now. Well, yeah, that's all part of it. But that just simply doesn't work when we're talking about, well, this many third graders were at proficiency. Let's just be nostalgic for a minute and say when third grade reading proficiency was third grade reading level, if that was ever true, let's romanticize about a past era. Well, great. But now what we're going to do is move that mark, teachers, because you did such a great job making sure all the third graders were reading at third grade level. But proficiency means something different now, something more. In fact, we can squeeze more out of you and more out of those tiny little brains that the learners in your classroom have. So it's a moving mark, Jacob. And, you know, there is no need to pull any punches. It's designed to kind of impose purchasing certain curriculums and supports for schools that are now not proficient, right? So those terms are misleading. And you are right, Jacob, to be asking the kinds of questions you're asking.
Tim, why can't you do what Johnny did and compliment my question?
Yeah.
Did you once say thank you?
Boss. Come on.
My ability to compliment questions questioning and questions from the producer. I haven't reached the proficiency level yet.
I see. Okay. That does make sense to me.
Well, Jacob has now explained the new level of proficiency on Busted Pencils Producer's Choice is flattery to the host of Producer's Choice. So now you know, Tim.
Now, well, that's a metaphor that hits home with me. Now I think I'm understanding it. It's based on me and my standards. And going back to my terrible woodworking metaphor, no idea where that was going. I've come up with a better one, Tim. Do you want to hear it?
Yes.
Okay, so let's say that I narrowly win my game of Madden I'm playing, and my little brother Jackson blows the other team out. You might think he's better, but his standard is rookie mode, and my standard I'm playing is Hall of Fame mode. So that might be what we're looking at here. I mean, maybe that is, it's just about the standard being higher, and that's how we're judging, and maybe, you know, it's not the proper place to actually judge the capacity.
It's a standard of being higher, like Johnny said, we move the goalposts, we do all this thing. But remember, what it is this is manipulation of people's emotions that are, and so we use these terms to help create a sense of doom and dread, which needs a solution. And typically, when somebody yells, oh my God, kids aren't reading proficiently, I can guarantee you that they follow up with, but I know how to fix it.
Well, and, as long as you buy my product.
Yeah, as long as you buy my product, you know, or change the way you do schooling, or certify teachers the way you certify teachers, or professionally develop principals. Everybody's got a reason or has got a product, a method, a something that they are going to introduce very quickly after proclaiming the sky is falling. And so not reading at proficiency levels, when somebody frames that as, my gosh, only one third of our fourth graders are reading proficiently, it will never be, isn't that sad? It will be followed up with, who's responsible? What's responsible? How can we? And darn it, if they just did what I want them to do, this would fix the problem. And here's where, throw a little bit of complexity and why potentially you need educated educators who talk education and who have looked at the research. Actually, for every one of those skies that have fallen, yes, there have been multiple skies that have fallen, particularly you can track it even further back. But 1983, A Nation at Risk, the sky was falling. And guess what? When the sky was falling, there were remedies proposed. And guess what? Those remedies were implemented. And guess what happened after those remedies were implemented? Oh, my goodness. The sky's falling again. There's a new reading below proficiency problem, and we've got a whole new set of solutions for you. Rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat.
And thinking about it, it seems to me that even those with the most good of intentions would really not be incentivized to put a message out that says, everyone can read just fine, don't worry about it. I mean, if you really care about helping with literacy, you're always going to point, I mean, with the best of intentions, you would still present it like, yeah, there's still things to work on. You don't want to make it look like mission accomplished, because there is always ways to improve.
Well, in fact, Jacob, and I don't know if you have more questions, but you point this out, which is incredibly important, because what ends up happening then in this, you know, rage to fix the problem, and or then people like me and Johnny going, whoa, wait, there are kids, in fact, all kids need really great reading instruction, great things to read. And yes, there are kids who are struggling. And when it comes to struggling readers, you know, as much as great curriculum and great teachers matter, this is kind of another one of these statistics. Nothing matters more than food, shelter, clothing, safety, and healthcare. If you want to remedy the reading unproficiency problem, you would invest all the money into just simple, even just birth through age three, nutrition, medicine, and the number one thing, giving kids books. Thank you, Dolly Parton, the only person doing anything to actually help reading. She gives away books, because that's another statistic. The more books in a house, the more likely that the kid and the family will not have reading difficulties.
And if I could say, Tim, to somebody who might hear what you just said and think that by saying that the focus needs to be on these general welfare things rather than specifics of methods for teaching or things like that, I think somebody might hear that and say, oh, okay, so you're just trying to pretend that the methods are perfect right now. And I don't think that's exactly what you're trying to say. What you're trying to say is that when you look at the effects and the causes, whatever problems are caused by inefficiencies in the methods is dwarfed by the problems caused by problems of welfare. Is that probably what you're trying to get across here?
That's why you're the producer and host of this show, Jacob.
Well, and Tim brings up an important point, Jacob, and I think you just kind of shine light on that, is that even if we were to say, wow, this proficiency measure, which it's not, but let's give it this romantic benefit of the doubt. Wow, we've come up with a really great way to measure this so-called proficiency, and we've noticed that there are a large number of third graders who are not proficient. Well, then Tim's saying that exists. There are people who are struggling readers. And our response is rarely been historically in this country, at least in most modern times of, say, the last 30 years, to say, well, what about their home life? What about their health? What about their nutrition? You know, that's brought up, but often not in association with what we can do in schools to support early learners. And Tim hits the nail on the head. You could have access to some really great classrooms. Mm-hmm. And if you're hungry, malnourished, right, sleepy, stressed, your nervous system dysregulated, as Teacher Hallie talked about in this past week's class in session, right, you're going to not be great or your best at learning. And so that it's entirely possible that an increasing number of young people in this country are experiencing poverty or the adverse effects of increased poverty. And those are, often not discussed in relationship to quote unquote proficiency.
Yeah. Because we can't fix poverty, Jacob. Darn it. What we can fix is buying better methods and better curriculum, because the investment, and people say that, and that also really gets at me, because no, actually, you could kind of dull the edges of poverty with less than the amount of money and resources that went into professional development for changing bad teachers, for buying better curriculum. Modest healthcare, modest nutrition, modest clothing and shelter. Actually, it's not that expensive. And in fact, there are really good educated people who have done the math to go, it's much cheaper actually to provide the early investment than it is to provide a lot of extra money to try to fix what is a really hard problem to fix when it has already been kind of, it's been saturated into the being. And so, and Johnny talks about it all the time. It's like, do we really care? Because if we really cared, we'd be making investments in things that actually do make a difference. However, that borders on this idea of, you know, some form of socialism, or, you know, the idea that, well, how will they ever learn to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, Jake, if somebody gives that one-year-old free access to medicine?
Do you think that perhaps part of the problem, Tim, and part of the reason that people may be reluctant to believe that the issues in our education system lie more in the environmental problems and the general welfare issues that children face rather than blaming teachers is due to statistics like these? Because if you believe that 83% of kids can't read, it's hard to believe that teachers are doing a good job of teaching. But if that number is smaller, if it's more on the margins, kids are falling behind, kids need help on these situations, then it's much more easier to make that connection for people that, okay, the teaching is okay, but there's problems outside of the teaching. And is that perhaps intentional on some people's part?
Oh,
100%.
Is it intentional? I mean, you know, if you want to put this show in a real simple brief, yes, the intentionality of duping the public into believing the sky is falling to either make people hate teachers, to think that, you know, kids aren't learning, to sell new curriculum. That's the point, Jacob. That is the point.
Well, that's a sunny way to wrap up this part of the conversation. We've got so much out of just that first part of the conversation. I'm reluctant to launch into something new, but there was just one more aspect that I wanted to cover. If we can try to do so in a relatively time-conscious manner. And I'll start with you, Johnny. On the show, I have heard, as your producer, we have these fellas come on from different schools, different educators, different methods. And I hear a little bit of a slight hint of sometimes it can come across as derision towards, oh, everyone wants to talk about can kids read or reading and things like that. And I want to ask, just to clarify, is it important that children should be able to read, or is that so 2000 and late and we're moving on to AI and two-hour schools? What's going on, Johnny? Is reading important, or am I overemphasizing something old-fashioned?
Well, Jacob, I'll say I'm not a player, but I read a lot. Okay. but no, jokes aside, reading is incredibly important. But what's more important, I think, and this is not me putting down reading, is literacy. In literacy, we have to think about more broadly and sometimes open-mindedly that maybe children's attention to reading the novel Moby Dick is different generationally than maybe say they are at reading comment threads or, you know, and this is me dating myself. I don't even know what I'm reaching for, what kind of reading occurs when you're on TikTok or when you're on YouTube. I mean, it's a form of literacy, reading their world and the role that interpreting signs and symbols in a particular order translates to them making sense and thinking and doing that. So that's literacy. And I think that will always be important. And the amount of actual reading may change over time. So that's a both and question. Yes, reading is absolutely important, but more important than the amount of reading is children's literacies, right? They're making sense of signs and symbols and communications. And so I think it's like, yes, reading is absolutely important, will always be important. But to understand it as more than, say, here is a 750-word passage, you know, read it in these 10 minutes and then answer these 12 questions and, you know, fill in the bubbles. I'm taking a poke here at standardized testing and, you know, the curriculum that's measuring proficiency. And then really saying, well, what are children's literacies? How are they reading the world? And how are we recognizing their intelligences? Because I think Tim brought this up before. The current young people, these generations, I'm not putting them down, but I do agree that they have a changed relationship to reading than, say, Tim and I have, and even you, Jacob, have. So I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing. But I think, so that's my both end. Reading is important, but more important is recognizing and valuing their literacies, which is a form of reading.
Tim, wow. Same question to you. Is reading passé, or have you and Claude and ChatGPT evolved beyond the need for reading, or do you think there's still value in it?
Well, as I said, you know, on the morning, Thursday morning on the John and Gordy show, you know, it could be that there's an evolution potentially occurring within the human species where some form of telecommunication between humans is emerging. No. look, again, back from the 70s, riff. Reading is fundamental. You know, that used to be the commercial. And it still points out that, yes. But what Johnny points out is that, you know, in one sense, what does it mean to read? And what are we doing to first acknowledge multiple ways, quote, kids are literate in reading? And think about, he just described to me one of the most incredibly horrendous ways that we actually create reading anger. 750 words, you've got 5 to 10 minutes to read the passage, and you got to answer these 5 questions. And that process is supposedly communicating whether you're a good reader or not. Since when you're reading on your own, do you set a stopwatch and point out to yourself that I got to read this page in 1 minute or I'm behind? And then I need to know the answers to these questions because some unknown person said that these are the important things I read about. Well, crap, when I read, I really was excited about this part of the story, not that part of the story. So, you know, think about how we even try to communicate. Reading is so damn important. Well, if it was so damn important, why would we not be doing everything we can to encourage and empower passion and love of reading, when actually what we do to come up with these measures that are proficient, grade level, whatever you want, are actually examples of probably the most horrendous way to assess whether somebody's a good reader.
Hit me with Dr. Tim. Tell me, what is a good way to get kids reading instead of forcing them to read 750 words within a set time limit? What is your, I'm Dr. Tim Slecker, I've got good ideas, and this is how I'm going to help kids start reading.
I mean, the first thing is to recognize that reading is a timed, you know, fluency. This is another word that comes across with reading. Fluency. Yeah, your child's not fluent. What's that mean? Well, I can tell you what that means, Jacob. And I don't know if I'm going to answer your question this way, but my daughter in kindergarten, I've told this story multiple times on this show different ways. We were called in because she was having a tough time according to the assessments that were being given. And she looked like she was not going to be a good reader. Now, she was already, quote, reading books at home and stuff. And we found, we're like, well, what is the evidence for this? Well, her speed at reciting and reading nonsense words is not at the speed limit that it should be. So she wasn't reading fake words fast enough in kindergarten, and therefore she had a problem.
That sounds a little bit like quackery to me, Tim.
Yeah.
But this is so early as kindergarten, we were setting up kids to start to associate some form of speed. And that meaning I'm a good reader or not a good reader. And yeah. How many potentially people go, oh, my God, yeah, we got to help her. And I kind of came at this and went, I'm like, first of all, who cares how many fake words she can read? I want her to read real words. You know, so the first problem is fake words. And then fake words fast. you know, and so this is really, so what would I do? I would first just, again, allow reading to emerge as something that kids want to engage in. And so this is kind of all this early stuff. Guess what? When kids are really young, they have lots of access to really great picture books with things that they can flip through. And when they turn it upside down and they look at it, they're allowed to. You don't tell them to turn the book. Oh, you know, in other words, you almost have to just get the hell out of the way and provide lots of opportunities for kids to explore this reading literacy thing. I that to me is the biggest answer, is get the hell out of the way.
So you're saying that if Ronald Reagan were here, he'd say that nonsense words aren't the solution to the problem. Nonsense words are the problem. I think there's wisdom in that. To wrap this up, Dr. Tim, and maybe even waste enough time that some problems can be resolved. To me, I think the value of reading real books in your hand, piece of paper, I think the value in that for anybody, but especially for young people with the issues they face in the modern high-tech, highfalutin, fancy world, is there's value in spending time with ideas rather than getting them in 15 seconds from a TikTok. I think it changes the way that you can kind of spend time, mull these ideas over, see different applications of them, see how they're drawn out in a book over, you read it for a week and all week, not just when you're reading, but when you're riding your bike back home or you're doing things, you're reading that book all week and you're dealing with those ideas in your head. And I think it would be good if we could encourage people to do things like that. But I would say to what you said, Tim, that the way to get somebody to read a book quickly is not to drill them. It's to get them to really like books, and then they're going to like reading and they're going to try to read it as at whatever level they can do, whatever speed they can do that fits them. But that's how I came to love books. I think books are pretty cool. Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, thank you so much for being on your own show. It's always a pleasure to have you here as my guest. And I just have one last thing we like to do on the program.
Let's go!
In 60 seconds, Tim, can you tell me what your favorite book was as a child?
Yes, I can. My absolute favorite book was A Tale of Two Cities.
Nice.
Charles Dickens.
You know, that was the best book for me, but it was also the worst book for me. I don't know why, but Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, same question to you. Can you tell us about your favorite book as a kid?
Oh, I loved The Outsiders.
That was a good one.
Yeah, classic.
Good show, good books. Thank you, Tim. Stay golden, Johnny. And now I believe it's a thing we do.
It's time for your moment of zen. We don't all have to do heroic things. All we have to do is little things. And at certain points in history, millions of little things come together and change takes place.
Hey, thanks for listening to today's Producer's Choice. And if you want more Busted Pencils podcasts, will you head on over to Apple, Spotify, or you can always get us at civicmedia.com or on our website, bustedpencils.com. And don't you forget that you can get great Busted Pencils content every Monday for homeroom, every Wednesdays for class and session, and you know it, folks, on Fridays for Producer Jacob's Choice. And of course, you can always tune in on Saturday and listen to the Busted Pencils weekend broadcast at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media networks for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.